going to seem so terribly ridiculous, but Keith and I lost, within 21 days of one another, our two beloved pets. Now, we're dog freaks, and my Sonny, my constant companion, was 18 stinking years old. 18. I mean, the most of my youngest daughter's life had Sonny in it. And so, I mean, this was a long time. And I knew that one was coming. I mean, how many dogs make it to 20? Her face was just completely, she was black, and her face was just completely white. And who would know if my hair is white? You won't know it for a while. But hers, we did not color her hair at that point. And so, but our little Beanie, our bird dog, was only 9. Beanie had fought off a disease, a bone disease, for many, many years and just been the picture of health. But we gave her medicine every day. When Sonny died, that day, Beanie went and got behind the bushes in our yard that day. And I said to her, get out, because I promise you, you're not going anywhere. And get out from behind there. That dog was dead in 3 weeks. You know, we were all like, but don't you love us? And she was like, I love you, but I miss my friend. So her body just, isn't that crazy? But her body just gave way to that disease. Just gave way, and she was dead in 3 weeks. So crazy. Well, so I have about a month left to go when I get a new puppy, because the Moors have to have a dog. We have to have fur in our, we have to have, like, dog hair in our throats somewhere. You know, it's just us. It's just us. We have to have it. So it was never a question. I've known other people so devastated they never got another one. I can't conceive of that. My dear friend Janice here at LOI, she lost her beloved golden retriever, and she was like me. She could not have grieved it more, but she had to get a new one. I mean, that's all there was to it. And so I bring in this little puppy, and of course I name her Queen Esther, because why wouldn't I? I'm in Esther, and so I named her Queen Esther. So I have this ongoing memory. I thought, I have not been in this Esther, but boy, have I been with Esther. Queen Esther, I call her Star for short, but she's very much the queen. And I've told you this part of the story before, but it's so perfect for reading out of a portion of Esther. When I first got Star, you know, we are go people, and so they have to be go dogs, and they're taught how to behave in a car immediately, because we can't have any dog that cannot travel. We can't have it. And so, you know, I want them to have a lot of fun. I like to drive with the windows down with dogs' heads out of them. I like it when other people do it. I'll just drive up next and, you know, I just love it. I love it. And so I was trying to teach Queen Esther how to look out the window. And, you know, I didn't want her to jump all the way out, so I had to just crack it. And she'd get up, because she'd always stand at the window and look out. So I would start to lower the window, because I'm up in the front seat where I have all four controls, and I'm kind of glancing in my rear view while I'm driving. So I'm cracking it down like this, but for months, when I lowered the window, Queen Esther went down with it just like this. I'd bring it back up. I'd bring it back down. Bring it back up. Bring it back down. And I would say to her, you're missing the point. The point is, like, you stick up your head and you do it over and you get the real view. But it took forever. Now she loves it, but it took forever. And I'm just like, this is so silly, because we drive past people and the window would be halfway down, and she'd be down here looking at it. Get up. And so but it's such a picture of Esther, because the whole book, you know, God is not on the forefront where he is obvious by name all over the page as he is in so many other books. I mean, a picture, Esther and Exodus next to one another, they could not be more different. And it's looking, what she had to do was, she had to look through the mirror darkly, the glass darkly. She didn't get to have her head out in that open air where we have very obvious revelation, working through a whole different set of circumstances. And I want to read, once again, I'm going to read a long portion, but I just want you to go with me here. Esther chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city, and he cried out with a loud and bitter cry. Of course, there's been a death sentence, extermination for an entire people. Happens to be the people of God, no less. A death sentence placed upon him. He hears about it. He puts on sackcloth and cloth and ashes, tears at his clothes. He goes, it says in verse 2, he went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one was allowed to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. Don't you just love how they protected the leader from any of the grief? Oh, by all means. Sometimes that can happen in Christian leadership. We let everybody else handle the pastoral side. I really am called to study and let everybody else do that. And really, I don't want any sackcloth and ashes in my presence. And we will cease to have anything to say about the scriptures because that's where it applies. Right there in the real depth of life. And it says in verse 3, and in every province, wherever the king's command and his decree reached, there was great mourning among the Jews with fasting and weeping and lamenting, and many of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. Verse 4, when Esther's young women and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Do you kind of love that? We can't just really camp there because we don't have the time to, but do you just love that for a moment? Don't we kind of do that? Somebody will be all upset about something. We'll try to think, you know what? A change of clothes would help. Are we constantly trying to, you know, if you looked a little better, you'd feel a little better. Let's get the robe off and let's get, you know, because we think that fix it. We got to fix it. There are some things you can't just fix with the next outfit. Verse 5, then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. What it was and why it was. I love that. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Verse 7. Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Verse 8. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her and command her to go to the king to beg his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. Verse 9, Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and commanded him to go to Mordecai. So this is going in between. One comes to her, she sends it back to him and say this, verse 11, all the king's servants and the people of king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law, to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come to the king these 30 days. Most beautiful woman in the kingdom. But I mean, there were others. I mean, she'd not been called in 30 days. Imagine that your husband just ignored you for 30 solid days. And you want me to go to him. Only this time he's the king and he can put you to death. Not make you feel like the living dead. Put you to death. Verse 12, and they told Mordecai what Esther had said. Now, I love all this go-between. Then Mordecai told them, okay, you know what? You reply to Esther. Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this. This is when we want to escape it and let somebody else do it. What if this was the very time that for all practical purposes, we were planted on the earth? Such a time as this. It so moves me to see that he tells her, if you keep silent, it's going to come some other way. Why? Because God was faithful to his word. And he had promised that even in their disobedience, they would be carried into oppression and carried into bondage, but that he would deliver them because he had made a covenant with their father Abraham. And he would keep it no matter what. It was based on his faithfulness and not on theirs. He would bring relief and he would bring deliverance, but it would not be through her. And she would go down with it. And I just want you to understand with me today, because there is a concept that applies very, very much to you and me. God is going to do his thing. He has a kingdom agenda, and it's what he's talking about through the prophets when it says what his will stand and no man can change it, no matter what. That what he is doing, his kingdom agenda is in stone. He knows exactly what the plan is, and he will do his will. His kingdom will come, and he will do on earth as it is in heaven. Oh, yes, it will happen. But the question becomes, in the difficult times of our lives, will we join him in that process and be part of that relief and deliverance that comes to us first, and then those around us, after us? Will we be part of it, or will we pass it over because it's just too hard? I mean, it just takes too much energy. It takes too much death to self for me to do that kind of thing. And so he's going to do it anyway, but you're not, and I'm not. And so the question on the table today, are we going to miss it? Are we going to wimp out on it? And I'm talking about what's really, really hard. Are we going to wimp out on it because we go, you know what? He does not need me. No, he's completely self-sufficient. I am that I am. But he invites us to join him in a kingdom agenda where our works will last all eternity. But we just sit back and go, use someone else. You don't have the thing going in your life that is more important than the call of God in your life. You don't have it. I promise you, the thing you were born for that is the only thing that's going to fulfill you in your heart. There are many other things we love, many other things we find satisfying. But I'm going to tell you that if you do every other thing, all those wonderful loved ones, and oh, they are, I wouldn't trade my family for anything. But then if I made it to my death, just on the eve of my death, and did not fulfill my calling, there would have been something I was still going, you know what? I never found it. And we'd want to go, Lord, you weren't faithful. You told me I had a calling. And he might say back to us, but you know what? You didn't like your this for such a time as this. You know, for such a time as that. No, this is the this. But Lord, I want for such a time as that. No, no. For such a time as this one right here. This ugly one. This ugly one. This deadly one. This deadly one. Not at such a time as that. Right here. Right in your now. I don't know what's going on. How hard is it? I can only imagine. I hear from you all the time. I have my own stuff. I got my own problems. I go through my own pain and my own just sheer terror of some circumstances. I get it. I get it. And what are we going to do with it? Will we join him, or will we sit back and watch it? Because it's going to happen one way or the other, but we could just perish in our affliction. That's all there is to it. I must trust God, period. I must learn to trust God, period. That's it. It's the sentence stops right there. Because, you know, I like to walk in faith. I like to believe the promises of God. I like to, in my situation, I'm going to get me a concordance. I'm going to start pouring through the Word of God, finding all sorts of scriptures that apply to my situation, and I'm going to start asking for it. I'm going to start asking for it. I still do that. I still do that. That still is my first way of approaching a situation I'm hoping to be delivered from. But it's not good enough because it left me shakable over and over and over again because I realized that what I was doing, yes, we do walk by faith. I mean, we do exactly what I just described, but it can't be all we do. What has to undergird it over and over again, or you've just had it, you will ride a roller coaster every day of your faith journey. You will shake and be easily moved if every bit of your trust in God is conditional. In other words, I'm going to trust God to not let that happen. I mean, I've got something in my life that I've got every day of my life. I've just got to go, I got to trust you that that's not going to happen. And a whole lot of my life, you know, oh, this is the threat on the page of my life right now. Is anybody getting into this with me? Anybody got a threat? This is the threat on my life right now. And in my experience and in my loves and in my, the things that are dearest to my heart. And I'm going to trust God that this is just not going to pan out this way. I'm going to trust God that this is not, I'm going to trust God to just bring us in a detour. I'm going to trust God. And all that time, that's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Walk by faith and not by sight. But listen, if everything we do to trust God is always conditional on what He's not going to let happen, we are going to fry in the oil of this earthly experience, because we will have assigned ourselves to the most tumultuous journey that a person in Christ could possibly have. I will trust God not to let that happen. And here's what happens if we do that, if we decide that we're going to practice, and only you know, I start just going through sort of the journal of your life experience and what really defines a fair amount of your walk. And I ask you, is your faith, I will trust God, period? Or is your faith more like mine was for so many years? I'm just going to trust Him not to let that happen. And I mean, a lot of times it hasn't. But then what happens if it does? So here are two things that occurred to me, that as long as my trust in God is conditional, then I've set myself up for two things. The first one is the enemy will keep threatening me with it. If our trust is conditional, what we've set ourselves up for is that the enemy will keep threatening us with it. Case in point, if our biggest threat is that something is going to happen to our teenager, then every time our teenager is late, not only have we panicked, we have pictured the funeral. Am I lying? And mothers, please go with me. Or fathers, I'm asking you, if they get late enough, have we not only started picturing that they're going to be dead? And listen, tragedies happen, but most of the time, what happens? They come home. They come home. But we've already buried them in our mind. Listen, sometimes, I just hate to admit this, I've cried. Oh, I pictured the whole scene. And I've just cried because something's happened to my child. Now, she's 16 and a half minutes late. And in 16 minutes, I've completely buried her. This is what I've lived with much of my life. So the enemy will keep threatening us with it. Every time you can't get a hold of a person that you're most trying to hang on to. Oh, this has happened. I've lost him. If you're single and you want to be married, every time a get-together, a meetup is a flop and you realize he's not the one either, like, it's never going to happen. Am I telling the truth? If you're married and insecure, every time you're spouse seems distant for a little season. He's having an affair. I just know it. I know it. I mean, something's on his mind. Threat. If you fear financial ruin, every time your money gets tight, we're going to go into bankruptcy. Am I telling the truth? Is it just me, y'all? Or does anybody else just, woo, your mind just like, woo, it goes ahead and puts you there. So understand with me that all of this is it's in our insides. It is creating all the same emotions and physical responses in our adrenaline, in our stress, in our blood pressure, throughout our intestines. We are now, our fear goes ahead and puts it as a reality. We're already experiencing something that never has even happened. Because we keep buckling to the threat of the evil one. Many of you have gone through this. If you've had cancer, every time you feel like it's getting close to another scan, every time you get a cold, the cancer is back. And Lord, I trusted you not to let the cancer come back. And listen, I say this with respect. I know many of you on this one. I know. Listen, our world is full. I don't care what airport you're in, what many, many large restaurants, our churches. It is a very common sight to see a shiny bald head. When you live in Houston, Texas with MD Anderson and the whole medical center complex, we have people come to our churches all the time that are there from around the country. They're in MD Anderson. That's a common sight to us. So We understand many of you right here, many of you on the inside, you have gone through that diagnosis. You may be in remission now, you may not be. But that threat, Lord, I'm just believing you to deliver me from it. And so the enemy threatens it over and over and over and over. I want you to know what the enemy does when he knows that that's what we fear most. So he sets us up. Oh, it's going to happen. Oh, it's back. It's back. He doesn't love you anymore. He's looking at somebody else. All this kind of stuff. Your teenager is gone for all practical purposes. She'll never come home. All this stuff that he just like whispers into our spirit. The devil is all about threats. All about threats. Because only God knows what really is going to happen. So all the enemy can do, the enemy knows what's going to happen in the kingdom agenda and that he is going to be put out for eternity. Revelation 12:12 tells us that he's furious. The devil is furious because he knows his time is short. But as far as the specifics go, he doesn't know what is going to happen. So his best option is threaten it. Figure out what they're scaredest of and then threaten it. And I need you to know today that the devil is a false prophet. The devil is a false prophet. Oh, he prophesies all the time. But he is a false prophet. So we've seen a couple of reasons why if we've got conditional trust, if we don't come to a place where we just go, I've just got to trust you, period. If we just keep going, I'm going to trust you to deliver me. And I like to do that. I do that first. But right behind it, I've got to go, but you know what, Lord? I trust you. I got to trust your heart toward me. I got to trust your love for me. So if we keep doing that conditional thing, the enemy will threaten us with it over and over again. Here's the next bullet point. It's just two. If it does happen, and let's just say most of what we fear does not happen. I'm going to say that again. Most of what we fear never happens. And now I want you all, even on the other side of the screen, I want you to say it back to me. Most of what we fear never happens. Never does. But if it does, then not only are we devastated by the situation that itself brought all that pain, we are now also totally devastated with God because he did not keep his word. Now, what we're really saying is he didn't keep mine. I spoke this over him. I was clear in what I told him to do. I signed his son's name to it. There was no way he could have misunderstood me. I told him exactly what to do with the situation and he didn't do it. And because my trust was conditional, now I'm down for the count. Because we're devastated with him. We claimed that husband never would leave. We said, in Jesus' name, he will not. And what if he did? Now what? So I want you to look back at Esther 4:16. Because there's some wording there I want us to lock on. It says in verse 16, go, she says, in her reply to Mordecai through Hatach. Go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And I and my young women will also fast as you do. And then I will, I got to tell y'all something because women, this will be so interesting to us in our day because we live in a culture that says you cannot be skinny and thin enough. That is what's going to be the most beautiful. Do you know nothing could have been further from the truth to them? Do you know that to have fasted for 3 days would have been to drop your skin and kind of make you look a little hollow around the eyes? They felt like the oils, olive oil in a food, helped put the shine in your hair and in your skin. Very, very different culture. They did not. To look bone thin was to look like you were poor. My husband's grandfather was still alive after Keith and I got married. And what he said to Keith, he said, well, when he first met me, he liked me okay. But he said, well, you know, but she's a poor girl, isn't she? And it didn't have anything to do with money. It had to do with she didn't get enough to eat. And back in the day, to be that bone thin meant that you did not have enough food to eat. Totally different culture. So what she was saying would have made her less attractive to the king rather than more. So that's a big deal here. It was a very big deal to him. And then she says in mid place in verse 16. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. If I perish, I perish. I want us to camp for the rest of our time together in this series over these couple of phrases because so much hinges on what we do right here. I want you to think we're going to reword it just a little bit because we're going to put back in it the word that is implied in our sentence. If I perish, I perish. Everybody say it.
If I perish, I perish.
If I perish, I perish. And so what we'd really have, if we were going to stick a word just for extra clarity in it, we would say, if I perish, then I perish. If I perish, then I perish. The name of this series is If and Then. Not if and when, if and then. Because I want you to stare at these two posters we have on this platform, and I want you to think this through. I'd love it if you would take it down somewhere in your notes. If you're home, grab a sheet of paper, and here's what I want you to do. In two different lines there, I want you to write if, and then I want you to draw a blank. I don't want you to fill it in. If, blank, and then I want you to write down then, blank. Because this sentence right here challenges us continually. Season after season, circumstance after circumstance, all manner of personal up and down, we are faced with this very thing. Now remember, the enemy wants to always turn the if into a when. Oh no, it's just a matter of time. I can tell you, you and your husband will never make it. I mean, he spoke that like a false prophet over my family over and over and over again. And I believe I would rehearse it. We'll never make it. I don't think we're ever going to make it. I cannot see how in 5 years we would possibly have ever made it. So he likes to take the if out of it and switch it for a win. There are some wins. We'll talk about some. And I don't mean W-I-N-S. I mean W-H-E-N-S. But if this happens, then this happens. And what I want you to do is I want you, long after we're off the screen, I want you to mess with this for a while. Take a couple of days with it and leave it blank on your page, but jot down scenarios. All sorts of ways you could fill in those two blanks and see what you could come up with. Here's what I'm asking you to do. I know this is painful, but I found such freedom in it. And I'm hoping somebody here, I know this is going to hurt for a little while, but get through the other side of the process. I want you literally to think through some of your worst case scenarios. Pick a few. Pick a few. I can think of a few. Maybe some of them would be common to us. Pick out two of the worst things, what Job would call when my worst fears have come upon me. What would they be? Pick them out and think them through. What if they did happen? I'll give you a couple of mine. If my husband had an affair, then what? And so it got on me, and I just was overcome with fear about it. And I thought, okay, let's take it to the worst. So the Lord was like, it was as if he said over my heart, think it all the way through. Think of the nitty-gritty. I mean, Beth, think it. Go ahead. Give way to it for a moment. Just let your thoughts go with it. What would it be like? I thought, okay, worst case scenario is not just that Keith had a one-night stand. I want to say again, in case you've just tuned in, he has not. He has not. Say he had. That wouldn't be my worst fear. Oh, that's awful. That would not be my worst fear. What is by far worse than that? He fell in love. If Keith fell in love with another woman, and if she were half my age, I'm coming to the worst one of all. Worst one of all. And my daughters liked her and accepted her. And my grandchildren called her something like Mimi or Fifi. That's bad. That's where that is concerned, where infidelity would be concerned. It does not get worse than that. When it's full throttle, everybody loves her, everybody just loves her to pieces. That is my worst nightmare. If he's gonna do it, let's at least hate her. I mean, that's the way this comes down. I want my girls to say, I'm never speaking to my father again. I really don't mean that. Well, sort of I do. But, so the Lord would think it through. How about what's the worst it could be? Well, Lord, that is the worst it could be. Okay, Beth, then what? Well, I'll be devastated. Then what? Lord, I'll cry for months. Okay, fair. Then what? Well, I'll be so mad, and I'll probably have trouble trusting people, and I'll probably look around me constantly to see if she's there, and I'll have to go to, like, baby's births with Fifi, and okay, fair. Then what, Beth? Then what? I mean, just not out loud, just kept pushing in my spirit. Then what? Okay, then what? Well, at the end of the day, I knew. I'm gonna get on the floor, have a fit, cry my eyes out, open up the scriptures, bury my face in them, cry out to God to redeem my pain and work it through until it bears fruit that never passes away. And then, by His grace, I'm going to get back up. Stand back up on my feet. Wipe off my knees. And go. Let's get back to living. I demand in Jesus' name my joy back. I will fulfill my calling. There may be some people that can't take it. Somebody else needs the word so bad, they'll be okay with it. I couldn't fix it all. I'm not God over it. But if that terrible thing happens, then God is going to take care of me. He has to. I'm His. He has to. You're His. There will be the grace, and there will be the grace. Hebrews chapter 12 says, the grace to which applied, He can treat our bitterness. The grace to have the strength to get back up. I don't have to tell you what my other worst fear is, and it's worse than this one. It's the only one worse than this one. And it's if something happened to one of my primary loved ones, then what? And the Lord made me look at all the way through. And you know what? I thought about four or five of them, and I cried as if it had happened because I felt like what the Lord was saying to me. No. Don't give yourself a shortcut here. Think it through. See the grief, Beth. Now, again, He wasn't saying it out loud. In my spirit, He was pressing me through a test. See it in your mind. Stand at the casket. Picture them in it. Beth, you've done this over and over. You might as well do it with me right now so we can work this thing through. Stand at the grave, then go back to the grave with flowers. Do it, Beth, in your mind, since you have pictured it so many times right here before me. Like, do it. Live it out in your very mind. See, and then what? Lord, I don't know. Lord, it would... The months that would follow. Yep. Oh, I've missed them so much. Yes. Then what? I gotta get back down on the floor. I gotta wash His feet with my tears as I hang on to His ankles for dear life and go, You are the only anchor to my soul. These ankles are the only anchor to my soul. I am dead raise me from the dead. And one little joint at a time, we start, just start, to get back. Not as one who's never been through it, but as one who is ministered to by the miraculous manna of God's grace that will be given according to our need when the time comes for our suffering. It will be given for every need we have in exact supply, little by little. We get back up as one who has been broken in a world of brokenness, one who has been wounded in a world of wounded people, one who believed her or his life was completely over. My mother-in-law told me something after she lost her firstborn at 3.5 years old. The anniversary was just of 50 plus years, just a couple of, I did not have in my mind to share this, but the Lord has put it on my heart right now. And it was not in my notes, not even occurred to me, but right now as I'm sharing it with you, it's coming back to me. Just last week, we were at a hamburger place that is not far from where we live in the country, just outdoors, just sit at picnic tables and eat. That's kind of what we do where we are. And my father-in-law, my husband, sort of got preoccupied talking to the guy that runs the place because he's just out there with us. And so it was the three of us were kind of talking. And my father-in-law, I noticed that they seemed somber. I love them. They're my parents. They are my parents. My parents have been gone for a number of years. Keith's parents are my parents. I love them like my own blood. And my father-in-law, he leans in to me like this. He says, "Baby, today is the anniversary of Duke's death." I was taken aback. When he said it, my mother-in-law was sitting right across the table. So I'm sitting right next to him. Keith is sitting by her, but Keith is talking. He has no idea what we're talking about. And I look at her, and she reaches down her pocket. And the whole time we're talking, 50-plus years later, he said, "Well, we went to church and knelt at the altar together. I leaned over to my mother-in-law and I said, 'Do you remember what you told me one time?' When Amanda was his exact age, and I don't know why it came up. I don't know why I had the courage for it to come up, because my mother-in-law does not talk about a lot of this very much because her heart is so very, very moved by it. But when Amanda was about his same age, I said, 'I don't know how you lived. I think if I wouldn't live, Lord.' And she said to me, and I reminded her of this a week and a half ago, 'I didn't mean to. I kept waking up.' I came home and I just cried my eyes out. I love him so much. But you know, my father-in-law leaned into me again and she was doing like this, to wiping her eyes. He said, 'You know, honey, I didn't think we'd ever be okay. And I don't know what life would have been like if we'd gotten to raise all 5 of our children. They lost 2 of them. Too much.' But he said, 'Here we are, living the fullest years of our life.
You and Keith and the girls and the grandkids. You bring us more joy.
They're fruitful, happy. We can't pull him off the tractor. We can hardly get her inside. Planted a vegetable garden. Their lives are bearing much fruit. Come to Bible study. Lived so much of their lives out in church. The blanks that got filled in for them are the worst I've ever seen. He died in a fire. Worst I've ever seen. Then we think we'll grieve ourselves to death, but we keep waking up. Then here come grandchildren and even some great-grandchildren. We laughed again. We never have forgotten. But he was careful to tell me that night, a week and a half ago. Here we are. Happy. What are we going to do? Think it through. If we're going to play the game with ourselves and picture it happening over and over and over again, then let's just bring the whole thing before Jesus and think it through right before him, where he just keeps going, and then what, and then what, and then what, and then picture yourself in his arms, getting back to your feet and going, then my God will take care of me. He will. He will. He will. He will. I gotta trust God. Period. End of paragraph. Because he is faithful.